Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. I'm your host, Lily Allen Duenas. Together, we'll talk about the world of yoga and we'll talk to people from around the world. Before diving into the episode, I wanted to invite you to head on over to my Patreon account. I would love your support and I'm thrilled to have this beautiful community space where we can do yoga together, meditate together, and you'll get access to exclusive content. Get ready for some private Zoom Q&As, free printable art, meditation recordings, and more. Follow the link in the show notes to get started or head on over to any of my social media channels or my website, wildyogatribe.com, to hang out, get to know each other better, and find out more about all the support and resources available to you. Ready to dive in? Let's get started. Namaste, family, and welcome back to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Today, I'm so excited to welcome Victor Chung onto the show today. He's a yoga teacher from Singapore who first began his yoga journey in the late 1990s, though he did take his first yoga teacher training in Singapore in 2002. He began full-time teaching in 2004, and today he has developed his own system of yin yoga training and practice by integrating Taoist philosophies, Buddhism, traditional Chinese medicine, and Yellow Emperor inner classics to help his students understand a deeper dimension of the yin practice. He's also incorporated Qigong, an ancient energy movement developed in China, into yin yoga. He teaches all over Asia, and I'm so excited to be with him here today. Thank you, Victor, so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for your invitation, Lily. It's a great honor to be here to share that I can provide whatever that I know. Thank you.
And thank you so much. So, Victor, to start off, how did yoga first come into your life? I know that was in the late 1990s. And how did that happen? How did that come into your life?
Meditation first came into my life because of Buddhism. I was taking weekly Buddhist classes at a Dharma center. And that was when I was about 19. I have to do meditation, which was very difficult for me, for my body especially, and my legs went cramped very quickly, less than 5 minutes. And I have been attempting to do meditation, but because of the physical struggle, that was something that was very discouraging for me. After my university, when I was working, a friend of mine told me that there is a yoga studio in Singapore that is professionally teaching yoga. And at that time, the yoga studio is very accessible. It's downtown Singapore. I decided to try. Both of us decided to try. But she later on dropped out and I continued with the practice. My motivation is very simple. I just wanted to improve on my meditation so that I can sit slightly longer at that time, because lower back is difficult, legs are difficult while sitting on the floor. My main motivation has always been able to like get into Padmasana, get into the lotus pose to try if I can do my meditation better. So that's how I came into yoga.
Oh, wow. I love that it was through just seeking to sit in meditation more comfortable, because that is what yoga teachers say is the reason for yoga asana, is to be in seated meditation. That is some of the root from the ancient texts, like reason to practice. So that's so great. That was your actual reason, which is rare. I'd love to hear, Victor, too, more about Qigong. I know that's something that you practice, you teach, and you incorporate into your yin yoga practice as well. So talk to me about the relationship between Qigong and yoga.
The thing about movement, it has deep meaning for myself, because I always believe that there are two ways to practice meditation. Of course, coming from Anjali's time, yeah, and that is exactly the period of time where Buddhism established itself as well, and Jain as well happens almost at the same time. And this is a very ancient tradition that emphasizes on seated meditation, which is why the Buddha taught seated meditation, Patanjali taught seated meditation, Jain taught seated meditation. So there was that period of time, maybe about 2005 or slightly long years ago, where seated meditation is very much emphasized. But then we also know the part of history that India slowly moved away from this idea of seated meditation, and it created another way of accessing into meditation known as Hatha Yoga. So that happens maybe around the 13th, 14th century or slightly earlier. We don't really have exact time. But during that time, postures were then created. They are looking at how to access into the energetics of the body. Exactly in the same way, China indigenous, you can say, practice, a religious practice or spiritual practice is actually based on Taoism. Tao means the way, and they are to be unified with or to realize the highest potential of humanity. Exactly the same what India in yoga wants to do, but coming from a very different route. From the Taoist perspective, it has always been energetic path. So many movements were actually created in a form of dance initially, yeah. And then slowly from the form of dance, they understood that, oh, okay, it actually invigorates some kind of energetics in the body. So that's how they accumulated their knowledge. Eventually, a form of more precise form of movement were created, and we call it direction of qi, Daoyin. Daoyin actually is the most ancient form of qigong, you can say. Yeah. Qigong is actually quite a modern term that was maybe a few hundred years old, that when the Communist Party came and they wanted to sort of promote energetic based movement, they classify all the different types of movement based on energy in China under the big title known as qigong. Yeah. Qi means energy, yeah, or it's equivalent to the Japanese way of, which is the same word actually, because this language was adopted from China. And then the Indian call this prana. So they actually means the same thing. Actually comes from this idea that movement is directing the qi flow, or the energy flow within the body itself. So it was actually created for healing, and it was also created for spiritual endeavor. Yeah. So very much in line with the idea of Hatha Yoga.
Yeah, that is very much in line with it. And it's wonderful to hear you walk us through that history and through the relationship between Qigong and yoga. So I didn't read something in your bio that I'd never heard before, Victor, and that's the Yellow Emperor Inner Classics. Can you explain what that is to us?
Yeah, so I just have to qualify that at this very moment, this bio probably is in the process of changing. Because I have not done any teacher's training on Yin Yoga for at least 3 years since the start of COVID. And moving forward, things will probably change as well. Because of this 3 years restriction of travel, that has caused me to be very domesticated. So I devoted more time, but I devoted more time into my Qigong and Tai Chi practice. But actually, I started about 6 years ago. At that time, I already felt I wanted to integrate more and more energy-based understanding in my yoga practice, and looking at the chakra system of India and also looking at the meridian system of China. And I see a lot of similarities in terms of ideas. I see a lot of commonalities in terms of understanding of energetic imprints that are found in the body itself. So I've always been very intrigued in looking into how the meridian system, as well as the chakra system, the nadis, the murmur points, how each is an overlaying layers of map on this body that we can use that was documented in the past. I don't see them as conflicting or confusion. I see them as different layers of maps within the understanding of two most ancient cultures, how they look at the body energetic imprints. And these are knowledge that we can dive in and to utilize for the purpose of healing. You can say medicine is one way. Okay, you can come to Ayurvedic knowledge. You can come to Ayurveda. You can come to traditional Chinese medicine, which is what I call more botanical based. So you study herbs, you study the application of herbs, the understanding of that, which is very good. So if you look at Ayurvedic system and if you look at TCM, they both advocate botanical, right? The use of herbs. But more importantly, I think the commonality between Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine is that they start educating us that it is about our lifestyle. If you want to be healthy and you like to sustain long-term good health, which eventually leads to longevity, which eventually leads to a body that is disease-free. And I think Hatha Yoga came out very strongly about wanting to achieve an indestructible body. This idea is very important in yoga. Why is it that eventually we have to learn the science about how the body actually works via the route of medicine? Whether you're looking at modern medicine, traditional medicine, Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, why it is important is that one of the most fundamental idea about why anybody should be practicing yoga is to achieve this indestructible body, which is what so much required today after this experience of COVID, right? So within the Chinese medicine system, we have huge amount of documentation. One of the most ancient documentation is based on the teachings coming from this very ancient unifier of China, you can say, known as the Yellow Emperor. So people believe he is a mystical figure. Of course, Chinese believe that he actually existed and he is the one that brought humanities into another level of understanding through his knowledge on medicine, on how to heal the body, as well as on spiritual endeavor. He provided methodologies or you can say alchemy that allow a normal human being to ascend, to come into higher realization of his potential. Yellow Emperor is a very important figure, and we have an entire compilation of his knowledge on medicine, on environment, on weather, on different use of medication as well as spiritual methodologies. So the Yellow Emperor Inner Classics is one of the most important medical texts.
That's amazing, Victor. I've never heard about that text or that story. And I've also never, ever heard a yoga teacher say, why do we practice yoga? That's to achieve an indestructible body. I've never heard the word indestructible used. And that's so interesting that I understand from the text in the sutras that, yeah, we are seeking to get rid of illness and purify all the channels in the body. And even in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he does mention those extra kind of gifts and abilities that can come when you are so pure and clear and aligned. And it's pretty powerful to hear you speak about that.
Yeah, so I think we have to look at our influence of yoga in the modern time. While we like to refer to Patanjali as the main compiler of knowledge, 2,500 years ago and prior, because by that time when he compiled the sutra, this has been practiced till then. But what actually is the modern influence in the way we are practicing our yoga right now? It's not so much on Patanjali Sutra. It is actually very much influenced by the idea of Hatha Yoga, which is Kundalini based, okay, which is tantric based. So this is also not expounded by yoga teachers. They don't really know their roots and they don't really know the development of how the whole idea and concept of Hatha Yoga came about, which is very important because this came about quite late. The idea may came about maybe around the 13th century, but it was practiced maybe in the beginning of the century. And then knowledge needed to accumulate and compile. And maybe in the 5th century, things starts to get magnified, slightly bigger. And then that continues. We first have the idea of Tantra before Hatha Yoga even come into being. Because by the time Hatha Yoga come into a compilation, which everybody knows by now is Hatha Yoga Pratipika, this is another major revolution, but it's also an evolution of how yoga is being practiced because it's so different from 2,500 years ago, Patanjali's time. So when we look at Hatha Yoga Pratipika, we have to start thinking that there is another major shift of how to come into this state of samadhi, how to come into accessing into this higher dimension and self-realization. There is another route that is being proposed. That's why in Hatha Yoga Pratipika, in order to stay in line and merge back to Patanjali Sutra, there is a chapter talking about samadhi because that tells everybody that this is a valid practice because this practice eventually leads to the original idea of samadhi. But the idea is to come through the energetics of the body by physical manipulation. So how this idea of physical manipulation can attain samadhi, how does that work? Because there is a rise of this concept of Tantra, which is the use of sound, the use of energetic points or energetic imprints that are in the body. And because they start to realize there are energetic imprints in the body and the association with nada, which is sound, how to use that to stimulate into the energetic imprints, which I do believe because nada is vibration, that is working through sound, and they start using certain verbalization and stimulation, the body starts to come into spontaneous movement, which is, again, we find that in Taoist Qigong, there is a lot of spontaneous movement. And sometime in the world of Tantra, we call this the Kriya Bhakti. So they are spontaneous movement because of clearing out of a particular channels. So we call this Kriya Bhakti. Kriya Bhakti means as a result of the channel being cleared, there is response in the physical dimension. The body moves in a certain way. So that is Hatha Yoga eventually is being compiled. It's trying to provide another way of accessing into samadhi, which is what the original idea is from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, but coming from the energetics of the body imprint by the use of sound and by the use of physical manipulation. And that is actually what this modern practices, which is very much reduced, of course. Today, nobody is telling you, oh, what are you trying to change in the energetics within the body? Which chakras are you trying to work into? If you try to understand the 16 poses that is being presented in Hatha Yoga Tipika, you then have to question, why only so few? Why is it that they only talk about these few poses? They are using the asana to work into a particular concentration point in the body. That's actually what's happening. And of course, in the Hatha Yoga Pratipika, it also tells you that you have to have a guru. Yeah, you have to have a teacher that is going to reveal to you how exactly it should be done. So that is how knowledge is being passed. And today, of course, in the modern way of practicing, so-called everybody telling themselves that they are practicing Hatha Yoga, they never know how this comes. They also never actually look at how the asana, the chakras, the nadis, they are connected. They never know that. Yeah, they just like their Surya Namaskar, Vinyasa, and all that. But it's a very reduced, and not only is it reduced, the ability to use the movement to help themselves to heal is also negligible, or almost, I would say, it's not there if you are just doing physical movement. So it's as good as someone that says that I'm jogging every day. Yeah, it's purely physical. So unless you have a deeper dimension of what this is, that is going to help you throughout your life, and you, this knowledge that is going to be with you throughout your life, it's not only going to help yourself, because the first thing that you're going to gain is a long-term good health, and you are just heading towards longevity, and which is very much this modern idea of, you can say, anti-aging and age reversal. Yeah, how are you going to do that if you don't really have good knowledge on how the movement can actually help you to sustain your life for a very long time? So if we are just going through some physical movement, it's as good as you're swimming, you're biking, you're jogging. But if we really like to achieve the ancient sages in the text that has been telling us, we need to understand something more profound.
Wow, Victor, so much amazing knowledge you shared. I think that is such a gift that you're sharing with us about the history and the deeper dimensions, and also calling out yoga teachers for saying, hey, if you haven't studied more about the nadis, the chakras, the meridians, if you haven't gone a little deeper into understanding how the movement impacts your energetic body, all the layers of your kosha, right? We shouldn't just be focused on the anamaya kosha, not just us, that gross body, the outer layer. Let's go deeper and let's understand the map of our own body. I love that. And you said something so interesting to me too, Victor, before we hit record. I know you mentioned that you feel like people are moving away from yoga. Can you explain more about that?
Yes, I think that's going to be a trend. More and more people will move away from yoga. And I think yoga has been a big trend from the 90s, and we are now moving into another phase. One of the greatest reasons why people are moving away from yoga is exactly what I mentioned. People look at yoga as an alternative to contemporary exercises. So when yoga starts to be reduced to exercises, and it can be substituted by any of these exercises, that's where yoga starts to lose its value. Yoga starts to lose its attraction, because yoga initially was never started that way. The whole development and evolution of yoga has always been to help humanity to really come into it, to realize its highest potential. Yoga is a technology for internal engineering. But when we look at how yoga is being represented today, going into like a big gym concept. So you have very big yoga studio, 40 over people, and sweating it out, trying to push themselves and trying to get into all this physical with nothing behind their mind as to exactly why the poses has to be in that way. What exactly is it that they are connecting with within themselves while acting on those skill movements? So people don't want to start moving away from internal works to just purely on external work. Then something else is going to replace that, because people inherently wanted to know more about themselves. And any kind of work that is going to help one to discover more deeply and more connected deeply with himself is going to be the one that is going to gain popularity moving forward, because we enter into this particular dimension of time where people are looking for self-realization. They are looking for more. They allow themselves to explore more into the inner world. And I guess it's natural after these 3 years of COVID, there is a lot of contemplation and self-reflection. So people want some modalities that can do self-healing. So self-healing is very big, I would say, moving forward. And also some sort of spiritual opening and awakening. The way that I see this is going to happen in anybody's life is that they first come through by wanting to understand more about themselves physically. Because it is through the gross that you see the subtleties and eventually the unmanifested. If you can come to more connection with your physical being, and when I talk about connecting with the physical being, I really mean being watchful of what you do physically, what you eat physically, what you practice physically. Because that is very important. As one gets more connected with himself, he starts to question, what he is putting on to his physical being. And how much is that adding value to his life? So that is a very important contemplation and self-reflection. And then it's revealed to him that there is more to this physical entity that he is living with. Like what you mentioned about the koshas, they are actually layers of our existence, from the manifested to the unmanifested. So how are you going to access into this unmanifested dimension? The first is to get more connected in the manifested. So like you said, I work very hard. I want to earn a lot of money, right? Yeah. I don't care if I am eating, I'm taking a proper meal or I'm not taking a proper meal. I don't care if I sleep or I don't sleep. Yeah. So if you are in a life routine that messes up the physical dimension, then I have to tell you, I'm sorry. There is no way that there is a light in that unmanifested that you will see, because it is only through the gross that you can access the subtleties. So that is what happens when Patanjali's Yoga Sutra eventually lead to the evolution of Hatha Yoga. You already see that because humanity is getting more and more distracted, you can no longer request someone to sit quietly and just wash your breath, or you go into this brain wave, a higher frequency of brain wave. You cannot request that of people today, especially. We are so different from people 2,500 years ago. And having said so, maybe Hatha Yoga has history of maybe about, 1,500 years ago. Already we see that it's not happening in India, because then the method of getting into samadhi changes. So what we really need to realize for people who are true Hatha Yoga practitioners or yoga practitioners who really use this as an internal technology for self-transformation, you have to start understanding that if you start ignoring the physical dimension, you won't be able to see the unmanifested.
Amazing. I'd love to hear more about yoga in Singapore. I've never been to Singapore, and I don't know much about how yoga got popular there, or if anything else to know about yoga in Singapore. We're all ears.
So yoga in Singapore at the moment, I have to say, is a little bit challenging in a sense that we are very much into contemporary exercises. And yoga is very much a very commercial setup with big studio running and leading the scene at the moment. And therefore, people who are in touch with yoga has very little access into the purpose and the culture and the historical background of why and how yoga came about. A little bit unfortunate, but we also have to bring this ancient technology and apply in the modern times and make it accessible to stimulate the modern people in a direction that provokes them to think more about their own life and more about how they can self-heal, which is what I'm doing here in Singapore. I don't want to call it yoga anymore because at the moment I am bringing and integrating the idea of Qigong and yoga together. I'm calling it meditative movement or energy-based meditative movement because I feel that the whole teaching on yoga has to be moving towards enabling people to self-heal, enabling people to come into contemplation and self-reflection, and enabling people to understand more deeply about this physical entity and beyond. Meditative movement includes things like Qigong, like Tai Chi, and it could have any kind of movement that requires people to stay mindful about their action, or you can say whether is it coming through movement, whether is it coming through speech, or whether is it coming from mental thoughts, anything that requires a kind of mindfulness practice, it can come under the label of meditative movement. They are found from India, China, Japan, even including like in the Western world, but that is enabling people to achieve this inner peace, inner harmony, and self-realization.
I just want to say that's interesting that you're just moving away from the word yoga and you think the trend will go towards away from yoga. But it is interesting to hear how you're thinking about it and what that means to you and what you think it means for Singapore. So I'd also like to hear just about Singapore in general. Let's pretend someone has never heard about Singapore and just walk us through a little bit more about your country.
Singapore is a very small country, but it is probably one of the most cosmopolitan city and a country at the same time where people are accepted. Whether you're coming from the Western culture, the Eastern culture, we have probably the largest mix of race and ethnic groups here. And is one of the most unique population, you can say, in Asia, where you can such a wide range of ethnic groups and people here. So people here are very acceptance and open to new ideas and new things, especially things that are technology-based. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they are very acceptance to new technology. And here there is also a lot of innovation that is going on, especially on the pharmaceutical in recent years, this couple of years, very much into all the big drug company want to plant themselves here. Therefore, we have many different kinds of public holidays that is surrounding different ethnic groups. We have public holidays that are meant for Chinese, we have public holidays that are meant for Muslim or the Hindus. Many people would say that one of the most amazing thing here is food, where you can find so many variety of different kinds of food here. And one of the reason for many people visiting is the food. But I have to advocate plant-based. So most of the food here, the top, on the top list is difficult for me, because Singapore is so famous for their chicken rice, for their curry noodles and stuff like that. But unless it's a plant-based version, so it's nothing to do with me. I can't eat any of that.
I know. I'm also vegan. And when I travel, it is so sad to not be able to eat all the food of the culture. I get that.
Yeah. So I would still encourage people to think more plant-based. I don't necessarily need people to be vegetarian, but I really want to encourage people to think more plant-based. We have to start helping the earth, and we have to start thinking about changing the internal dynamics of our life. And plants, so highly intelligent, is one of the most amazing things that we can find on earth. Most intelligent, I would say. When we are taking botanicals, we are really testing the wisdom of all these botanicals. So important to understand that. So if we all wanted to be more intelligent, to be more efficient in accessing into higher dimensions of our brain, then we really need the help of plants. In short, Port is a very welcoming city, very welcoming. We have very little biasness, or even I would say none, among different ethnic groups, and people live very harmoniously with one another, with different ethnic backgrounds, or in the same block. It's an amazing place to be in. And by and large, good governance. And therefore, even though we have 3 years of very difficult time, we can still find some peace. I've not been this long in Singapore. As a traveling yoga teacher, I've always been in and out of my own country. And probably I spent just 3 months here. But then because of the lockdown, I've been here the longest time. I'm enjoying my time here. I'm spending a lot of time in working on Vipassana, working on my own meditation, and developing my own energy-based movement. So it has been a wonderful time for me.
Amazing. I'm happy to hear that. I agree that I hadn't been back living in the U.S. for a few years. The pandemic, COVID changed everything. So now I am back in the U.S. So I moved here just back at the end of 2022. So I know what you mean about being back in Singapore as a nomadic yoga teacher. I did that for a while myself. Victor, I just have loved getting to talk to you. This has been so fun. And there's been so much information you've shared, which I just feel like is such a gift for me and our listeners. And I want you to know that I'll link your website, Yin Yoga in Asia, your Instagram and Facebook, both are Yin Yoga in Asia. I am going to link those in the show notes. So if anyone is listening to this podcast, wants to meet Victor, learn more about him, follow him, get more information on him and his trainings, you can click on the link or go to my website, wildyogatribe.com/yoga in Singapore. And there'll be a transcript of this episode as well. So you can read along or you can refer back if there's a quote you want to find. So thank you so much, Victor, for being with me today. It has been such a joy to be with you.
Thank you so much for your invitation once again. It has been a great honor. Yeah. So I hope we can have another opportunity where I can discuss on different issues.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. My conversation with Victor Chung, a yoga teacher from Singapore, was so fascinating as we took a deep dive into the spiritual understanding of yoga and Qigong. I hope that this conversation made you curious about the energetic imprints on the body itself and how the chakras, the meridians, the nadis are all different layers of the same map that overlays the body and how to utilize that for the purpose of healing. If you're looking to tune into a podcast episode that is all about the aim of yoga, which is to achieve an indestructible body, then this is the conversation for you. Thank you for listening to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Be well. Thank you for the gift of your attention today. If you feel called, please share this episode with someone who you think could benefit from it. Leaving a review would also be so appreciated. I also hope you can join me online on my website, wildyogatribe.com, or on social media. I would love to get to know you better. I would love to share with you and to hear your thoughts. Send me a DM, send me a note, get in touch. It would be great to hear from you. And as always, be well, dear one. Be well.